Good morning, welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Mizmor Nun Ches, the 58th psalm in the book of Tehillim. This is a short Mizmor and it is really packed. It is made up of 12 psukim in overview and two main sections. The first pasuk, of course, is the Kotevet, is its introduction, which goes L'Natzeach Al Tashches L'David Michtam. It is a to the conductor, it is a Michtam as well for David, a plea not to be destroyed. Then the two main sections are running from Beis to Vav, which is a complaint against the evildoers and their actions. And the second section is Zion to Yud 7 to 10, where it is a prayer to Hashem to break down the Rasha'im, to break down the evildoers. And finally, the last two psukim are a conclusion about the joy of the tzaddikim as they witness, as they see the fall of the evildoers. Now, it is important to notice that actually in terms of style, there is a chiasm in this Mizmor of Tehillim. There is a reflected pattern in terms of voice. The first section, which is about the Rasha'im, about the evildoers, starts off directly speaking to them, talking about what they do, what you do, O evildoers, and then it talks about them in the third person. So it goes from direct to third person, second person to third person. Then Pasuk Zion is the call to Hashem. That's sort of the center, that's the hinge of the center of the pattern. And when talking to Hashem, first it starts off in Ches to Tes, 8 to 9, by beseeching Hashem in the third person, and finally asking Hashem directly in Pasuk Yud. So the wings, the outer areas, are directed. In the first section, it's second person to the Rasha'im, and then third person to the Rasha'im, asking Hashem, third person to Hashem, and then second person to Hashem. That's the general pattern. Rav Amos Chacham points this out when looking at this Mizmor as a whole. And of course, the centerpiece of this Mizmor then is Pasuk Zion, where he calls out to Hashem to break the teeth of the Rasha'im, to break their teeth, which is, of course, the tools of slander, which is he's been referring to in the last Mizmor as well as this Mizmor. In terms of the central theme, the narrator is complaining about the success of evildoers, but not just any evildoers, not enemies who are overtly enemies, but people who have position, people who have power, people who look like they are doing the righteous thing, but ultimately are not. So, for instance, in Pasuk Beis, the way he describes it is Ha'umunam Eilem Tzadik Tadabeirun Meisharim Tishpatu B'nei Adam. Have you really been struck dumb? You should be speaking your justice. You should be judging people with fairness. Meaning to say, he's accusing them of misappropriating the justice that they should be utilizing. And he calls and he begs Hashem to break them down. There are a lot of interesting metaphors in this Mizmor in terms of comparing the Rasha'im to different animals. So for instance, we see them being compared to a pesen and a nachash, which is a snake or a viper. And part of that is the idea of the venom of their mouths is what kills and maims. We know that it's the venom of the lashon hara, the bad talk, the evil, slandering ideas which are being spread about the narrator, about David in this case, which are so venomous, which kill people, even though they seem to be just words. Similarly, they are called to compare to kefirim, which are young lions, where David asks that their teeth be broken in, the teeth which are their weapon, the teeth of those who slander David should be broken. He also compares them to a shavlul temes, which is a snail, and part of that it seems to be pretty self-evident from the way he describes it, is that they melt away. As a snail moves, it loses its moisture. He said, let them lose their moisture and dry up and wither away like a snail. But there's another aspect of this, and that is that a snail, wherever it goes, it leaves a trail of slime behind long after it's gone. You can always see where a snail or a slug has been. And that's part of what Lashon Hara does. When you talk about somebody else and you think it was an innocent conversation, those impacts, those impressions, that bias remain there, are very, very, very hard for another person to remove when thinking about the person you talked about. And that's what the metaphor is using. There's another description over here of an eshes, which according to some translations is a mole. Also sort of hidden in the darkness over here is a description. He compares them towards the end to the sirah of the atad. That's in Pasuk Yud, where he says very clearly, "Beterem yavinu sirah zehem atad kamoichai kamoicharon yisarenu," which means to say that before your tender thorns grow the stalk, he'll whirl them away and with vigor and fury alike. So that what this means to say over here is that the older Rasha'im, the first generation of evildoers, are like this thick stalk, they are strong and hard. The young Rishayim, their children, are still supple, like the small, like, you know, bendable thorns at the end of the thorn bush. And he's asking Hashem to take them away before they become hardened like their parents, before they become influenced by those in their lives who are negative. In terms of events behind this mizmor, there's no specific reference, but it does seem to match a very important episode that happens in Tanakh. Though the Malbim says this in general is about al anshei Shaul shehisisu leShaul shirdof shenis acharei David. It's the people who tried to make Shaul continue to chase after David, and the Radak says specifically Abner. What's the background to this? So the truth is like this. There's two very unusual episodes that occur in the end of Shmuel Aleph. As we've seen for the last number of Mizmorim, they've been identified by specific events in David HaMelech's life. So in this Mizmor, we're referring to a very fascinating event. In Perek Chof Dalet of Shmuel Aleph, there's an episode which was referenced last Mizmor, Nun Zayin, where David HaMelech was trapped in a cave. That cave is likely the cave in the area of Ein Gedi, where David HaMelech was hiding. Shaul HaMelech comes in to relieve himself. David HaMelech is able to kill him, does not kill Shaul, instead slices the edge of the cloak of Shaul. When Shaul leaves the cave, David HaMelech emerges, he holds up the cloth and he says, Shaul, I never wanted to kill you, I never wanted this problem. If I did want to kill you, I would have killed you already. Here's the cloth, it's clear, I was had you in my hands and I didn't kill you. Clearly, Shaul HaMelech, please just leave this behind. And Shaul HaMelech breaks down and he cries and he calls David his son. And it seems like the whole episode has ended. Yet, once again after that, he's chasing David again. After this episode, Shaul HaMelech is sending out his army and using his troops. He's trying to kill David. And in Perek Chavav, the war camp of Shaul is resting, and David HaMelech sneaks in with Avishai, one of his generals, and is able to penetrate the inner guard while everybody's sleeping, and is able to kill Shaul, which is what Avishai suggests. And instead, David HaMelech just takes the water flask and the spear of Shaul HaMelech and leaves. He then goes to the mountaintop, which is just facing Shaul, and he calls out, he wakes them all up, and in fact, he doesn't even speak to Shaul. He turns to Avner, and the words he says are the following. This is in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Tesvav. Vayomer David el Avner, Halo ish ata, are you a man? Umicha moicha b'Yisrael, who is like you? V'lama lo shamartes Adonecha HaMelech, kivo achad ha'om l'ashchis ha'melech Adonecha. How could it be that you allowed a infiltrator to get into the king? You're supposed to be protecting him. Why were you asleep? Look, I have his spear. I have his water flask. And then Shaul HaMelech again breaks down and apologizes to David. What's fascinating about this is, what happened? Why was it that Shaul HaMelech was chasing David after he apologizes in Perek Chof Dalet? Why is it that David HaMelech is addressing Avner here? So what the Mefarshim do is they piece this together, the Midrash over here at the beginning of this Mizmor, and many of the Mefarshim in Shmuel Aleph point out that why was that Shaul HaMelech was trying to chase David again is because his people, led by Avner, said the following. Ah, David was holding that corner of your robe and showing that he cut it off. That's not true. He found it on a bush. As you're leaving the cave, it got ripped on a bush. He picked it up and used that as an excuse to prove his innocence. He's not really into it. Or another excuse they gave, another rationale they gave, is that David HaMelech really was going to kill you, but if he would have killed you, we would have sent the army into the cave and massacred him and cut him into small pieces. So you know what? That's why he didn't kill you. It's not because he's an altruistic person. Shaul had that aperture, that window of opportunity of seeing David in a good light, and his own officers disallowed that. They didn't allow him to absorb that experience in the correct fashion. And that's what's happening. David HaMelech is now turning to Avner. You're a person of justice. You're a judge. You're the head of his army. How could you say such falsehood? How could you use your teeth, your tongue, and slander with all this venom against me to have my father-in-law continue chasing me when you know I'm innocent? That is what's going on. So that's a little bit of perspective over here. In terms of the places this appears in the Tefillah, this Mizmor does not appear in our Tefillah. However, in terms of Psukim in the spotlight, let's just focus for a second on Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is the conclusion, where it says, Yismach tzadik ki chozo nakom, po'amav yirchatz badam harasha. The righteous man will rejoice when he sees revenge. He'll bathe his feet in the blood of the wicked. You know, it sounds pretty bloodthirsty, sounds pretty difficult. How is it that we're rejoicing over retribution? Rabbi Nachman of Breslau says in Likutei Moharan that he says it's important to know that sometimes in life, when things happen, bad stuff happens, we always try to search for some sort of natural cause. You know, the car tire wasn't pumped up right, the weather conditions, the roads, the timing. We have lots of things we try to blame for negative things that occur in our lives. However, it's important sometimes, and again, this is not about finger-pointing, but it's important to realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice being meted out in this world as well. Because he says, in his own words, he says, Me'achar sha'kol misnaheg rak al pi seder ha'teva chas v'shalom. There are people who say that everything in the world is just nature. It's cause and effect. Hashem's not involved. He says, you know what? There are times where Hashem is involved. There's times where we have to look at it and realize that this is a kapara, this was an onesh. There were times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reached out and was showing retribution. And retribution, it's important to appreciate because it's the only way we can ever change. It's a very hard thing to swallow, but it's important to appreciate. The Gemara in Sotah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, takes us to a very fascinating story which occurred in Bereishis in the subtext, where we know that Yaakov Avinu was taken on a special mission to his body was taken to the land of Canaan to be buried in Maras HaMachpelah, which was the promise that Yosef had given him. And as they arrive there, Esav appears. Esav is not interested in Yaakov Avinu taking the spot in Maras HaMachpelah. After all, there were two sons of Yitzhak and Rivka. He claims the rights to it, and they have to go back to get the papers to prove the documentation that ultimately Yaakov was the one who was given the rights to this cave. While they're waiting there, there's a person by the name of Hushim, who was the son of Dan. And Hushim, in fact, was a person who was hard of hearing. He did not understand what was going on, but he just saw that his grandfather's way lying there, not being able to do anything. Naphtali was sent back to Egypt to go get all the proof. So what he did was he simply took a kulfa, he takes a club, and he hits off the head of Esav, killing Esav. And the head was ultimately buried in the Maras HaMachpelah. And the Gemara concludes, V'hainu d'chsiv, and this is what it says, Yismach tzadik ki chozo nakom pa'amov yirchatz b'dam harashoi's feet are washed in the blade in the blood of the Rasha. Refers to Yaakov Avinu, because the head of Esav rolled over his feet when it entered into the Maras HaMachpelah, and ultimately that was the revenge. Yaakov Avinu himself never sought out that revenge, but ultimately it was given to him for the terrible, terrible treatment that he received in his lifetime from Esav over those many years. The terror, the threats which he lived in fear with, ultimately there was a nakam, even though it was after his own life. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.